Engaging conversation on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Hi, this is Kevin Burke of Rachel's Vineyard. Welcome to Oceans of Mercy. Friends, we have two different perspectives I hear from my fellow Christians and pro-lifers, let's say age 60 on up. And when they talk about the younger generations and the future of the pro-life movement, I hear these two different takes. One is the young people are all being, you know, brainwashed in their secondary postgraduate education by the mainstream media, by Hollywood. All this kind of makes them blindly pro-abortion. The pro-life movement is aging, and they kind of feel the future looks bleak to them. Now, another perspective that I hear is that we are changing hearts to the truth. We have been forming pro-life leaders, and we're doing it today. And they're going to take us across the finish line in ending legalized child killing in our nation. So today, I have the perfect person to help us sort all this out. My guest today is Brian Kemper. Brian is the founder of Rock for Life, Stand True, and the Pro-Life Day of Silent Solidarity. Brian is currently the Youth Outreach Director for Priests for Life, and I'm really excited to have him as my guest today. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. I was expecting Mary or Jesus because you said the perfect person, and that's definitely not me.
Well, we're colleagues, so I know you too well
to
make that mistake.
I'm saying Jesus and Mary a little bit better than me, you know, or a lot bit.
So you have a lot of years of experience working with youth and young adults up to the present day, but boy, you got a lot of experience under your belt. What do you say about that opening? What do you say, Brian Kemper, to that?
Well, let's see. I want to go backwards to when I first joined the pro-life movement, and there were almost no youth involved. I would show up to events in the late 80s and early 90s, and I'd be the only one that looked like me with tattoos, piercings, and, you know, crazy hair and all that stuff. But also not many young people at all. I remember the first time I went to the March for Life in 1994, it was a majority, I'd say 70% or more older people. And as the years have gone by, Kevin, you know as well as I do that that has changed and almost flipped upside down to where I'd say it's almost 70% young people now at the March for Life. And we see the rise of Students for Life of America and Live Action and Survivors of the Abortion Holocaust and Rock for Life and Stand True. And I could go on with these youth organizations. But the fact is, it's actually the opposite of that, that there are more youth involved in the pro-life movement now than ever before. And it's amazing to see. I was with Father Frank actually just two weeks ago at the Supreme Court, and our events there were mostly youth. Even early Sunday morning rosary and church service were young people. You know, it's just not the truth when people say it's the pro-life movement is aging. Actually, it's growing in the youth department, youth area.
Hey, Brian, I wonder if that's because sometimes in some of the local activities, we might see an older group of very committed long-term pro-lifers. And maybe it's actually that the youth are active in other ways in the movement. Would you say that might be possible?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yes, you have the March for Life and you have certain events, the Walk for Life and different places like that. But young people are going to be more active online. The social media aspect of the youth pro-life movement is huge. I am on every social media platform, and you can look at Twitter, you can look at Instagram, Facebook, and especially TikTok, and see such a huge youth pro-life movement, young voices standing up for life. And not just here in America. Like I said, I've been to like 28 countries, 49 states, you know, I've been all over the world, Australia, New Zealand, Eastern Europe, South America, where it's young people. and it's a majority young people that come out for a lot of my events and such. And I think though that when you're going to see them mostly is on social media. I've got friends from all over the world that are contributors to TikTok and Instagram that put out amazing pro-life materials and have amazing debate skills. You have to look at the creativity. Laura Klassen, who does these amazing videos out of Canada, comedy, but still poignant pro-life videos. I just think that if you're looking at the typical banquet, yes, you're going to see mostly older people. A lot of younger people don't like going to banquets and such. But if you look online, there is a giant movement of young pro-lifers.
That's really encouraging. And of course, when we speak about banquets or activities where there'd be older people like me, we're obviously there's tremendous value to that. There's tremendous grassroots pro-life work being done. Oftentimes they are providing the funding and the support to organizations like Priests for Life, who have a youth outreach director like Brian Kemper, who's nurturing these kind of social media connections and stuff. So we're all connected, but I do want to encourage our listeners and viewers that the future looks very bright if we are looking from the perspective of youth. Brian, I also am mindful as you're speaking that sometimes we hear a lot of negative things about social media and its effect on young people. Yet what I'm hearing from you, it's also a tremendous vehicle for getting the word out. I'm kind of curious how you kind of got into being such a presence on social media and you know, that part of your story.
You know, I have sort of that love-hate relationship also, being a parent and a grandparent, and seeing what is going on with some types of social media sites. There's some tragic things, Kevin, tragic things going on in social media. OnlyFans, where you have these young women and men who have turned to sort of an adult industry that they can run themselves on OnlyFans. It's heartbreaking to see. And to see girls thinking that they have to show their bodies off, that they have to do all of this stuff to get the attention, to get the fans, to be TikTok famous or Instagram famous. So there is a downside, absolutely, to it. And it's scary. But I look at this as a darkness that we need to be a light in. And Kevin, so many people think that darkness and light are the opposite of each other, but they are not. Darkness is not the opposite of light. It's the absence thereof. If I took a dark room, I can turn on a light and the darkness is gone. You cannot take a light room and turn on the dark. The only way for darkness to exist is to remove the light. And so I always look at these kind of things as being a light in the darkness, going to these places and offering messages of hope and truth in these dark places. I remember well before a lot of the social media stuff, like even TV shows like Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher, when I got invited to be a guest on that show, so many Christians were like, oh, you can't go. Oh, he's so liberal and he's so this and he's so that they're so this. And I'm like, that's exactly the reason why I should go. One of the biggest controversies is when I was first invited onto Howard Stern, and that was back at American Life League back then. And Judy Brown actually backed me up and said, no, Brian, go be a light in that darkness. That episode ended up getting canceled. But the point is, I think the same thing is, yes, we can see dangers, we can see the darkness, we can see all of that, but isn't that where we should shine our light? Isn't that where we should be going to put that message of hope and love and forgiveness and all of those messages that we do in a place that's dark rather than in a place that's already completely just, I don't want to preach to the choir all the time.
No, that's a really good point, Brian. I was thinking of the ministry of Jesus, right? I mean, in his day, you know, he was going to places and talking to people and he was definitely good. Of course, I guess this is something that's a very important point with what you're saying is that Jesus obviously went in there fully armored.
Yes.
Fully grounded as the Son of God and fully grounded in his Jewish faith tradition. And, you know, he had that connection with the Father. And I think that's important when you journey into those places of darkness. But certainly Jesus set a precedent for us as his followers in that regard. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And you know what's funny is when we talk about youth and all that stuff, I always bring up Stephen, the first martyr. The very first martyr was a young person. He was a youth who had the courage to go and rebuke the Sanhedrin and call them out. And he lost his life for doing that. And I think we could, I look at some of my favorite martyrs, so to say, like Hans and Sophie Scholl. Sophie Scholl and her brother Hans, who started the White Rose Society in Munich, Germany, during the time of the Jewish Holocaust, who would go and pass out literature, flyers in places to expose what the Nazis were doing. These young German young people, and she was executed for spreading truth. Now, obviously, I'm not wanting to be executed or anything, but I look at these young people, the courage, or Esther. Esther, I think, is one of the most amazing examples of a young person who had the power to save a generation and was scared because she knew that if she entered the king's court uninvited, the penalty for that was death. It didn't matter that she was a queen. If she entered the court, the presence of the king, uninvited, the penalty was death, unless the king would hold out his gold scepter and pardon her. And her cousin Mordecai looked at her when she was scared and said, "Who knows if you were born for such a time as this?" And she entered that court and saved a generation. I think it's stories like that and that I relate to young people I meet today that keep me so passionate about the youth pro-life movement. When I see young people that are willing to take a stand, willing to even get arrested or get suspended from school or whatever it is for being a light in the darkness, that to me is amazing.
Yeah, you know, what you're doing is you're taking the energy of youth. Now, there's parts of our culture, the dark parts, want to take the natural sexual energy of young people and the creative and the desire to be heroic and make sacrifice, which is also part of, you know, being young. That's why our soldiers come out of our youth. You know, there's that energy and that desire. If it's nurtured properly, it can be put in really powerful. And like you said about Esther, it can really be a heroic and life-giving and light bringing. And not the opposite, which is to try to sexualize and go after them that way. So I think that's great. I'm so inspired by what you're sharing about the work you're doing. Now, at Priests for Life, of course, we, you know, our primary motivation is saving children in the womb from abortion, but also, you know, we have a very strong component of that, which is healing those who have been emotionally and spiritually wounded. By participating in that. And they're really integrated, interconnected in our ministry, Brian, as you well know. Now, part of your youth work is a presence at Christian music festivals. And how have you seen that interconnection between pro-life witness and healing in your own ministry outreach?
You know, Kevin, I believe that there's a huge connection, obviously. And I think I first really started seeing this with when I was with Rock for Life back when we both worked, you know, at American Life League way back and I was touring these music festivals. But I was selling pro-life t-shirts, which is one of my passions. Like I love wearing a pro-life message and such.
Yeah. Great. And you have great t-shirts and great messaging.
Thank you. Thank you. And we got popular and we were one of the most popular booths at most of these festivals. And over the few years that we got that big, something started to happen where I would have day after day after day at these festivals, a young person walk up to me and say, "Hey, I need help. I bought a shirt from you last year. And when I wore it at home, my mom confessed to me that she had an abortion before me. And I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say." And like, I suddenly started to see the effects of abortion on siblings, which is a big part of something else you do with Silent No More and the shockwaves of abortion. I was seeing that back in the early 90s where young people were ministering to their parents and witnessing to their parents, and moms coming with their kids to the booth and getting information about, because I've had Rachel's Vineyard info since the beginning at our booths, and setting these moms and these kids up with info to, or the kids to give to their parents about healing, and also for them, because these kids are telling me like they're hurt, they've lost some of their self-value, because they're thinking, what if that would have been me? What if I would have been the one that was aborted before another sibling? And it's something that's very hard. But Kevin, I think probably one of the most poignant moments for me at a music festival was in Ohio, actually, long before I lived in Ohio, a live music festival. And this woman came up to me. She was probably in her late 20s. And she was looking at all of our stuff. And she just had tears coming out of her eyes as she was looking at the fetal models. And that was a big part of our booth, were the fetal models. And then we would have a book that had graphic images, photos of the victims of abortion, the abortion victim imagery. But we had the book closed with a warning sign on the outside, which actually usually made people want to look at it more to see. And this woman was started to open it up, and I'm like, ma'am, are you okay? And she's like, I have to see this. And she started looking through it and just started crying. And I looked at her and I said, ma'am, are you having some regrets? And she's like, yes, I've had several abortions, and I never knew what it was, and I never knew it was wrong, and I never knew what it looked like. And I know that God forgives me, but I can't forgive me. And so I sat with her for a while, and Kevin, I think I've showed you this before. I went through an illustration where I asked her, I said, do you have a globe at home? She's like, yes, we have a globe. And I said, well, if you took your finger on that globe and you went north, once you pass the North Pole, which way are you going? And she says, well, you're going south. I go, exactly. And if you pass the South Pole, you're then going north. I said, but if you take your finger on that globe and you start going east, what happens? And she paused, and I said, nothing. You always go east. There is no East Pole. There is no West Pole. And I said to her, I said, do you know that God says in his word that he throws our sins as far as the east is from the west, an infinite distance from each other? He makes us white as snow. I said, if you know that God has forgiven you, it's gone. It's been erased. It's been thrown an infinite distance from you. And I looked at her and I said, listen, there's a band about to go on stage at the main stage. It was a worship band. I believe it was Crowder, David Crowder Band. And I said, I want you to go down there and I want you to give this back to God. To just let it go and know that he forgives you and you can forgive yourself. And she left our booth and she went down there. After that show, she came back to our booth a different human being. The glow in her face, it was almost like someone that had zero makeup on at all and then came and all made up, because she was glowing and red and she was smiling and she was just thanking Jesus. And she's like, I know I'm forgiven and I forgive myself. And it was just a beautiful moment. And we referred her to Rachel's Vineyard if she needed some more help and stuff. But that's really what it was all about, was that moment that she realized that God doesn't, like, I remember being growing up, you know, when I first became a Christian, and I was in the Protestant church. Popular thing back in the day with evangelical churches is, oh, you know, when you get to heaven, God's going to have that videotape of everything you did. And That's just garbage. That's garbage.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we teach about at Rachel's Vineyard, because it's such an important point emotionally and spiritually, the truth of what you shared spiritually with her is absolutely true. And she received a tremendous grace. For most people, that inability to forgive themselves is related to their need to go through a healing process, because in some ways, you memorialize the child until you are able to connect and recognize with that child, which takes a healing process.
Yes.
Particularly if your image of the child is one of that, you know, dismembered, destroyed, desecrated child, which happens in the abortion procedure.
Yes.
If that's your image and that's your emotional trauma, it's tough for the heart to open up and accept that God could forgive me of this. But when you're able to reconnect in love with that child and realize they're alive in the Lord, as John Paul II said in Evangelium Vitae, we entrust them to the mercy of the Lord and trust that he has a way of salvation for them. When they're able to make that healing journey and have that connection with their baby, then the heart can really fully open to God's mercy and love and forgiveness. So beautiful to see you reaching out like that and ministering to them. And I love that example too, Brian, because, you know, from the very beginning when we started Rachel's Vineyard, we were supported by the pro-life movement here in Delaware County, Pennsylvania. It's the pro-life folks that helped initially start Rachel's Vineyard, provide a place where we could have our retreats. So their love for the mothers and fathers who are having abortions is right there along with their love for the children in the womb.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I think about all of the young girls, because especially in today's society, the amount of young people that are sexually active and that are getting pregnant. Kevin, one of the things that's super important to me is knowing what to say to your child. And you have parents always asking, what do I say? What do I do? If my teenage daughter comes to me and says, hey, mom, hey, dad, guess what? I'm pregnant. Most movies or TV shows show depictions of parents flipping out and yelling and dads mm-hmm. wanting to beat someone up. And, you know, that's honestly, that's what men mostly want to think about is you want to beat the tar out of some guy. You know?
Those are the feelings.
And I really believe that that kind of reaction and that kind of attitude in the church, in Christian circles causes abortion. It brings about more abortion because those young people are so ashamed and so afraid. And even Kevin, the amount of pastors I've seen at abortion mills with their daughters, helping their daughters get an abortion because the pastors are like, oh, I can't let my church find out that my daughter was sexually active and got pregnant and such. Pregnancy is not a sin. We talked about this on when you were on my show and about how, you know, when my daughter came to me and said, Dad, I'm pregnant. And the only words out of my mouth were, I love you, you know, and that's important. There is so much anger, I think, and we have to understand pregnancy itself is not a disease. It's not a sin. It's a gift.
But that initial response to a friend or a coworker or, of course, your daughter, who's sharing an unplanned pregnancy, they're so important, aren't they, Brian? Extremely influential.
They're crucial. That is the life and death moment for many children. Yeah. The life and death moment for many children who die from abortion.
I have to say that prior to my being more convicted to pro-life, I had a very dear extended relative who I'd known for many years growing up. And she came to me, knew that I was in social work school, knew that I had some religious, it was kind of a social justice religious perspective at that time. You know, abortion wasn't really on my radar that strongly. And I remember when she came to me and she shared with me, and I was able to share with her, you know, there's other possibilities, healing resources. But here's the thing that I said to her that was really, that I really regretted later. And it was that, you know, ultimately, this is your decision. You know, and I can't, it's really up to you in the end what your final decision is. You know, I didn't say that this is a great blessing. You are a wonderful mother now, you know, et cetera. So I know personally how that response is so influential. And I think that if I had taken a stronger stand because of her respect for me at that time, I believe I could have had more of an influence in her pairing that child and not having some of the repercussions of that abortion that I saw in her life And that caused me great distress later.
Yeah, Kevin, it reminds me of like, okay, people always throw out, and we've seen this forever, is my body, my choice, my body, my choice. I could do what I want with my body. And then people will respond. And oftentimes good intended people will say, yeah, things like, ultimately, it is your decision and your choice. Well, I strongly believe that we do have the right to do what we want with our bodies until such a time as we are going to use our body to harm another human. At that point, you do not have that right. That is not your right. I do not have the right to walk down the street and punch somebody in the face. I don't have a right to use my body to harm another human being. I will be arrested for that. I will be charged for a crime. And so when we say something like, well, ultimately that's your choice. No, it's not. And what we are doing is basically saying, it's harsh, but we are saying, if you want to kill your child, go ahead. And that's what we have to do. We have to start talking about abortion for what it is. It's an act of homicide. Homicide meaning one person killing another person. That's what it is, plain and simple.
Did one of your t-shirts say that, Brian, or something?
Yes, t-shirt stickers, abortion is homicide. And actually, I chose that word over murder because murder is more of a legal term. And as abortion has been decriminalized by the Supreme Court, I felt it was much more factual and matter of fact to say abortion is homicide. Because that's really what it is. And that's what the definition of homicide is. And we can't... understand, we have to be there for the women that have had abortions, and we have to show them God's love and God's mercy and God's forgiveness.
And that's why. And the fathers too.
And the fathers and the siblings.
Yeah.
But just because somebody might get their feelings hurt doesn't mean we don't speak the truth. The fact is that every single abortion ends up in at least one dead human being. And many often end up in a dead mother also. But the fact is, it's murder. It's homicide. It's the taking of an innocent human life. And when we're talking about preventing it, we must be very crystal clear.
Absolutely. 100%. And I think that's what I love about our work together, Brian, at Priests for Life, Stand True, Rachel's Vineyard, which are ministries of Priests for Life. I love the fact that we are working together, that we come from the conviction and the foundation of the sanctity of human life. And like you said, there are times when it's necessary to speak the truth clearly. At the same time, you can have right alongside of that the mercy and forgiveness and healing of Jesus. Brian, I want to give a minute to talk about something I'm really looking forward to. I'm sure you are as well. I don't know if it's out yet or about to come out, but you have a new book coming out. Could you give us a little
yes. on that? Pro-Life is the New Punk Rock, which is also the title of my show. It should be coming out in around January, around the March for Life. I'm really excited about it. It's my second book, and I sort of go through the history of the youth pro-life movement and a lot of fun stories and ways that God has moved throughout the years. So I think you'll enjoy it, Kevin. You've heard many of the stories, but it's going to be cool to see them actually in print and in a book.
Okay. We have about a minute left, and I just want to give you a chance to share any social media or website info. They can get to you and get to your t-shirts, which are awesome and amazing, and you should get them.
Thank you. ProLifeProducts.org for all of our t-shirts, hoodies, all of the different merchandise. StandTrue.com is my website, but most of my stuff is out on social media. So Brian Kemper, Brian with a Y, just follow me on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, whatever you have. Interact with me. I'd love to talk with people. And I just want to encourage everyone that's watching your show. If there has been an abortion in your past and in your life that still stings, that still hurts, and that you haven't gone through that healing, look up Rachel's Vineyard. I think it's probably one of the most important things you'll ever do in your life. I think that you won't be sorry if you look up that website.
You can go to abortionforgiveness.com or rachelsvineyard.org. Thanks so much, Brian, for being with us. And thanks, friends, for being with us on this edition of Oceans of Mercy. God bless you.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.